might the framers of the U.S. Constitution be thinking about the events of the past few weeks? Perhaps they would surprise us and say, hey, everything fine. Or maybe they would say what someone with a very long view of Washington and power and global finance has said.
It is really true that our political system is broken.
That's W. Michael Blumenthal, former U.S. Treasury Secretary, author of a new memoir, From Exile to Washington, a memoir of leadership in the 20th century.
I had, when I was in the government twice, we always had big disagreements with the other party. So I was in a Democratic administration. But we were always able to sit down and argue and then make a deal. And this present situation where one part of one party doesn't understand that or doesn't care about it or doesn't want to face reality or doesn't want to deal with facts is very damaging to this country, to lots of individuals who lose their jobs and their income. But above all, it's to the functioning of the democracy. So that needs to be faced.
What do you think it's done to the Treasury? The Secretary of the Treasury was often a position that, you know, was more like a technocrat. You were very much an economic visionary working behind the scenes in the administration, but you certainly didn't have to put out fires like Timothy Geithner or Jack Lew have had to do in this situation, and you rarely had to emerge into the political sphere. It's a different job today.
Yeah. Well, I beg to differ with you a little bit. Secretary of the Treasury of the United States has never been a technocrat in the background, starting with Alexander Hamilton.
Well, Hamilton, he is the exception, that's for sure.
Well, there have been more or less prominent secretaries of the Treasury in the course of U.S. history, but it's after the Secretary of State, the second most senior and most important job in the government, and I certainly had to deal with fires and put them out. I had the good fortune and misfortune, however you want to call it, that I was in that job during the second worst energy crisis of this country, mm-hmm. when OPEC was jacking up prices for oil. We had gas lines. The dollar was taking a beating. This was the period of stagflation for those old enough to remember.
No, and I am old enough to
remember.
But those were external factors that came in and really caused a crisis. This is so self-created.
Well, it brings us to the central point of my book, which is that it's individuals who make history. Nothing in history is certain until it happens. Things can go in almost any direction depending on who has his hands on the lever of power. If you had a different leader in the House or a different group of leaders in the Republican Party, if you had a different leader, say, in the White House, say, I think very highly of President Obama. He has many great talents. But if Lyndon Johnson, for whom I worked, were in the White House, I think things might be a little different.
Yeah, I think
so individuals matter in this, as in this crisis. And we've had the misfortune that we haven't had the right people. I don't really mean President Obama, but we haven't had the right group of people to tackle this complex problem.
Well, we're going to tackle this issue of leadership from a different perspective. I'm talking with W. Michael Blumenthal, former Treasury Secretary, author of the memoir From Exile to Washington, a memoir of leadership in the 20th century, a look at leadership when we return. Secretary, stay with us. We found ourselves lucky to have former Treasury Secretary Michael Blumenthal in our studio on the day this latest political crisis in Washington ended. His view of Washington goes back to the 1950s, where he worked his way up at the State Department to become a U.S. ambassador advising on trade matters at the White House and the United Nations, before heading up the Treasury Department during some of the worst financial crises of the 20th century. It's a story that begins with a man as powerless as one could be after World War II, and the remarkable story of learning that in the end, real leadership is the thing that matters most in world affairs.
The emotions are first of all one of enormous gratitude, because it is true, was true, perhaps a bit less so this now, that this was still the land of opportunity. I came with $60 in my pocket, landed in San Francisco in 1947. And 14 years later, I was Deputy Assistant Secretary of State. And 16 years later, I was a United States Ambassador representing the President of the United States. No country in the world would have given me that opportunity. Now, some of it is good fortune. Luck is always a factor in this. I happen to know a guy who was working for President Kennedy, who knew me, had studied with me at Princeton, and who opened a door for me to get in, but also just simply the fact that I could get an education here. I came with a 10th grade education. First thing I did was to be smart enough to figure out I better get some more schooling and went to eventually the University of California at Berkeley, which in those days I could do for $35 a semester. Mm. Nowadays, it'd be several thousand. So the opportunity was there. So that, first of all, it was that feeling. Then that feeling of enormous satisfaction of finally having a say. I had been kicked around. There were forces there that caused my life to move in one direction or another without my understanding why. Finally, to have a say over my life, in control of my own life, be grateful to this country for giving me that opportunity, and then really try to work hard to make something of myself. And then when it happened, enormous satisfaction. I won't deny it. There's pride, mm-hmm. there's ego involved, there's pride that you've done something with yourself. But then the question always arose, what are you going to do with this opportunity? Are you going to do a better job than all those people whom you observed, who ran the government in China very poorly and caused inflation, caused enormous poverty? Can you do it better? When you are in a company or running a company, can you run the company in a way that pays attention to the people that you're responsible for? And both in my private industry jobs as well as in the government, I tried to learn from that and to apply it. Didn't always do it well, but I tried. Mm.
You know, I'm thinking about that opportunity. And I'm thinking today, and I'm trying to imagine myself as you in 1947 landing in San Francisco with the I guess I'd probably rather have $600 today than $60 in my pocket.
Multiply by 10. That's okay. Yeah.
If you had landed today, if you found yourself in that situation just starting out today, do you think those opportunities exist anymore? Do you think the extent of the opportunity to get the education and to make it the way that you made it even exists today in America?
Well, for some people, there's always opportunity. Just think of the ones who invent some electronic gadget and go from nothing to billionaire. That could still happen. But for the kind of person who comes in the situation that I came in, it's much more difficult. It's much more difficult because in the early post-war years, the United States was the only major economic world power. There was opportunity everywhere. The country was booming to retool itself after the end of the war, full of returning veterans, all eager to do things. My fellow students in Berkeley and eventually in graduate school. Things were cheap. Yes, there were arguments. People didn't like President Truman very much in those days, and he was beginning to tackle the racial problems we had in this country, civil rights and so forth. But there was opportunity, as I said. I could. It was easy for me, relatively, to go to school during the day and work at night or on vacations and to earn enough to keep going and put myself through school, at least in the beginning until graduate school. That's all very much more difficult. And I watch my own children. They struggle more than we do. So it's harder now.
Are leaders more important now?
Leaders are always important. How can I say more important when I think how my life's been affected by Adolf Hitler? A very, very bad leader, to put it mildly.
Although with the opportunity eroded, there's less margin for error. It's more important that someone, particularly in the United States, really take the hand of power and do something with it.
I would say, in fairness to people in charge, it's more complex. It's more difficult. The world has become more complex. It's more interrelated. In those days, what the United States wanted to do, it could do without too much reference to other countries. Of course, always other countries. But after, in the post-microchip era, I would say, the United States is just one, it's the biggest factor, but just one factor in a very complex interrelated system. And the control that leaders have over the destiny of their country is clearly more limited than it has to be. You need to be much more alert to what goes on in the rest of the world. You have to look for allies much more than you did before. It's, and even in your own country, technology has given us many, many gifts, but it's also complicated our lives.
W. Michael Blumenthal, former Treasury Secretary, author of the new memoir, From Exile to Washington, a memoir of leadership in the 20th century. Thanks so much.
Welcome. Nice to be with you.
Our conversation on the parallel universe of online social media and the real world has become your conversation. Rules of conduct in one don't apply to the other. You from Oklahoma City?
We have a 13-year-old son. You know, we've had a discussion with him about the appropriateness of what should happen on social media, but we also try and balance that with his growing sense of privacy and responsibility.
Consequences we take for granted in the real world may be irrelevant to lurkers on Facebook and Twitter and Ask FM. We'd love to know your story on this subject. 877-8-MY-TAKE is our number, and there's much more at thetakeaway.org.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.